Hello, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us today, talking about home renovation, home repair, water inspection issues. Kent Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison is one of our guests. And again, Kent, it's a pleasure to have you with us today.
And it's good to be here, Jim. Nice to see you.
And John Freiberger, his partner of Freiberger Consulting in Fitchburg, consults for historic restoration projects, water and mold litigation, and is a Wisconsin registered home inspector. And I've got to give my support to Ken, who helped me out in a serious time of need the Sunday after Thanksgiving, when for the first time in 31 years, I had managed to lock myself out of the house. The keys were in the house, and I was outside with my wife and the two dogs after taking a walk. And fortunately, Ken is a neighbor, and he was home, and he got his toolkit and came out and was able to get a pane of glass out of the exterior window to the basement, and then was able to pry open the interior window to the basement and then slither through, go down and let us in. And
quite an adventure.
It's one of the nicest things that has ever happened to me in my life.
I'm really happy to do it, Jim. It was. I'm glad it happened when I was around.
So right, it
could have been cold, but it was fun.
So let me suggest to you something that he recommended to me, which is to go to someplace like Menards and get a small safe that goes into the it would be the jamb between an outer door, inner door.
Yeah, they're like a little lockbox that the realtors have for your house, and except that you can screw them right to a wall someplace.
Right, and
have
then
a
have a combination and drops one key, your house key, when it's absolutely vital and necessary. And so we'll be installing that. And thanks for the suggestion. And it was relatively inexpensive to purchase for quite
$30 or something.
No, for like $10.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so everybody should have something like that. Our lines are full. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Before we go, let me say that John in Mount Horeb emailed he was going to drywall the interior surface of the walls of an exposed basement. There's already fiberglass between the studs. Is there a product he should put over the walls before adding the drywall that would further reduce heat loss? Gentlemen?
Well, if you already have the fiberglass insulation, that's probably all that's going to be adequate in a basement. But he's probably going to want to put a vapor barrier on over the top of the studs to prevent the formation of condensation in that wall system, because it will be cool on the backside.
A couple things that popped into my mind is I was wondering how old the house is, because if it's under 2 or 3 years old and it had been insulated, there's a lot of moisture that is given off because the concrete, even though it's hard, it's not completely cured, and it offloads a lot of moisture in the first few years. He may want to, before he does any sealing up, to pull a piece or two from the corners out of the piece or two of the insulation out of the corners and see if there's any wetness or mold in there. Mm-hmm. And if there is, then he's going to want to do a lot more work to make sure that there's no mold. But that's the only thing that sort of popped into my mind.
All right. Let's go to the phones, and we'll start off with Jeff, who's in Platteville. Hi, Jeff. What's on your mind today?
Oh, I appreciate you taking my call. We just built a house, and one of the things we did, which I wish we hadn't, is put in a hatch that has a drop-down stairway that goes from a heated space up to a roof. And the problem is that the enclosure is made out of metal and insulated. The door on top that closes is insulated, but the metal is continuous from inside to the inside heated space to the outside, and you can just about guess the warm air from our heated home hits this cold metal surface and condenses. And I'm just sort of out of ideas. I've tried a number of different things, and so there's condensation up inside of this enclosure. There's condensation on the heated room side of the door that folds up, which is an aluminum door, and so the whole thing. I could probably plant corn underneath it and let it rain on it all winter, but short of that, I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, we've actually faced that problem in a house on Winnequa Drive some years ago, didn't we, Ken?
That's right. We were working on it together.
Now, on that house, we had a little bit of room. It was a flat-roofed house, but they had about 16-inch trusses. Is there any room to put in a air and thermal barrier, Jeff, below the hatch?
No, it's flush with the ceiling.
Oh, that's
there
really difficult.
12-inch joists, but which are foamed, mm-hmm. pretty solid.
What about disassembling the unit and putting it up higher on the rafters since you've got so much depth, and then having another door, an insulated door below it? Would that be feasible?
Well, it might be. The whole entire unit is one. It's not. It didn't. It wasn't assembled on site. It was dropped in by almost like a crane,
yes.
if you will.
Right, but you may be able to put a wooden roof curb above the roof so you can raise the hatch up, and that'll give you some space underneath. You can have a hinge drop down so that you can get a thermal barrier and an air barrier there, because this thing is going to be just constant problems mm-hmm. unless we can stop air from getting up there.
Well, if it came to that, what would you think about dropping down the entire ceiling? It's only... The room itself is maybe 12 by 12, something like that. Putting in sleepers and dropping the ceiling down 6 inches or something?
That might do the same, you know, it'll have the same effect. You are losing some ceiling height, and not knowing the unit and not knowing the application, I couldn't tell you what the cost-benefit analysis is of it. But if the headroom's not an issue, that could certainly work. You'd want to make sure that you tied in the new rafters with to the existing. If you're going to use 2x4s on a 12-foot room, that's probably too long of a span for the 2x4s, I think, by about 3-4 feet. So if you supported them to the ceiling above, you'd probably be fine.
So if I created an airspace there that I could insulate, it would be unventilated. Is that a problem?
If you put a new ceiling on, you just put a second vapor barrier underneath that ceiling, and then the little hatch that you're going to move really should be airtight in any case, and that also can have a vapor barrier on it. So that should give you no real implications other than you're going to have improved insulation for the whole assembly, as well as stopping air and heat loss through this hatch.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much, Jeff. Good luck to you. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Rebecca next in Madison. And Rebecca, what's on your mind today?
Well, it looks like condensation happens to be the topic of choice.
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a similar situation. I have an 8-year-old tri-level home that has windows that crank outward, and they are all wood encased. And for ever since we've had the home, I've been battling condensation on the windows, so much so that I spend every day wiping the windows down, and the wood is starting to get black. Mold is starting to grow on it. And I'm out of ideas as well as to how to help the situation. Sometimes I'll crank the windows open slightly just to let cool air come in, but then, of course, that skyrockets the heating bill. I've run the fans. I've done different things to create airflow. We do have a humidifier on our furnace that I've even turned off to see if that makes a difference, but it does not. I still have condensation on the windows.
Let's see what our guests have to say.
Okay, there's three approaches. First, we can make the windows warmer by limiting the heat loss, which means you have to have very expensive, good quality windows. We don't know how good your windows are. They might only be R2 or R3. If they are sort of standard Wisconsin windows, once the surface temperature of that window hits about 30 degrees and the humidity inside is 40%, you are going to get condensation. If you have more than 40% condensation in your house, or 40% humidity in your house, you're going to get a lot of condensation. The first thing to do is to buy an inexpensive humidistat and see what the humidity is in your house. You can get them online. You can get them at hardware stores. But if you are above 40%, and in the middle of winter when it's really cold, even 35%, you really need to get the humidity down. Now, you said you turned off your humidifier. It may still be on.
Mm-hmm.
Humidifiers have an extremely high failure rate. We found them running water through them continuously when they were turned off. When you turn it off, don't just turn off the little electric knob, but go and find the saddle valve and shut off the water supply to that humidifier. Okay. The other thing to do is to check your furnace. We are finding a lot of furnaces that leak. If you have a modern furnace, it's a condensing furnace. Condensing furnaces produce water. The water, in many cases, is dripping down into the fan box, and it is acting. The furnace is acting as a humidifier. I'm finding about one of those every other week right now in houses, and they can cause tremendous amount of damage. So I would start with those easy things, and if it if that doesn't solve it, send me an email at frei@chorus.net. And I can give you some additional resources. The first one that comes to mind is to take a look at the Cold Climate Housing Information Center at the University of Minnesota and look at the Angel and Olson household moisture source article, which will tell you how moisture gets into your house. And that may help inform you if it isn't the humidifier.
Okay. Could you repeat that email address, please?
Yes, it's frei@chorus.net. We're always happy to answer questions for people who are making large donations to public radio.
Okay.
And good luck to you, Rebecca. Thanks very much. Ken's email address is ken@adamsofmadison.com.
That's right.
And John at frei@chorus.net. Let's move next to Dave and Shano. And Dave, what can we do for you today?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I have a question. I am installing a wood stove in my garage, and it already has a LP furnace hanging from the ceiling. It is sheeted both on the walls and the ceiling. How do I go about it? It is vented through the roof. Do I need to get, I'm not even sure what it's called, a heat shield for my wood stove? It is a 4-inch outlet pipe on my wood stove.
Are you talking about to protect the structure from the stove? Is that what you're asking?
No, going through the roof. Is there a certain type of heat shield? Because, like I said, it's already the gas furnace is vented through the roof, but there's no kind of heat shield or any kind of shield, I guess, because the stove pipe will get hot.
Right. No, absolutely. There are units that you buy for going through walls and roofs. The manufacturer of your stove should be able to give you exactly what you need.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be the place, this first place to start. And you could probably find all the information you need on their website and call a salesman and have them send you the proper flashings.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Dave, thank you very much for the call. We're talking about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues today with Ken Adams and John Freiberger, and we'll take more of your calls in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you with us today. Erica Janik is our on-air producer. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And we're back to the phones with Robert in Lancaster. Hello, Robert.
Hello. I was calling about an issue I think might affect thousands of homes here in rural and small-town Wisconsin. We're just hearing about, like in 2 years, they're going to have stricter new regulations statewide for septic systems. And a lot of our, you know, either out in the country or even in little towns, you know, we have tiny little yards, and the septic field is in this quite small yard. And the new regs are going to be to the effect, like if you have a one-bedroom house, the septic system has to handle 150 gallons per day. Two bedrooms, it'd be 300 gallons per day, and so on. And we're wondering, it's just going to make it just not feasible for a lot of houses, little old frame houses that are only worth $30,000. You know, there's no place for them to get a new septic system. Have you heard anything about the new regs?
No, I haven't really heard about the new regs for septic fields, but I do know that there's a lot of new regulations coming down in all of the various disciplines, electrical, plumbing, septic as part of plumbing, and so forth. But I don't know a lot about septic fields, and so I can't really speak to that. But I do know that until you until you have to replace your existing septic field, you don't have to worry about these new regulations being imposed on you, because your existing septic field is, you know, grandfathered in until you have to do some modification. So take good care of it. It's always a good thing to take good care of a septic field.
And we'll continue to monitor the situation, yeah. And when those guidelines are distributed, we'll probably do a program about that.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Robert.
All right.
Ben. Let's go to Reed next in Clintonville. And Reed, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, gents. Say, I've discovered in my attic a small area that is not vapor barriered, and on the attic, on the floor of the attic. And also one small area on a the side of a unit that goes through the attic into the or through the roof for a skylight, and I am able to reach around into these areas with my hand, and I can basically get a measurement and cut some blue foam board to fit in there. But it's really difficult to try to staple a vapor barrier in there because the it's very constricted. So I was wondering if it's all right to. I've called the company Dow. They said it's a moisture resistant. They won't say it's a vapor barrier, and I could fit that in against the backside of the sheetrock. Also, I thought if I did that, I could perhaps next year. This warmer weather, when the temperatures are correct, spray foam in there over that, removing the blue board then and the spraying foam, or just spraying the foam over the blue board. What do you think there?
I think there's an easier solution, Reed.
Yeah.
There are vapor barrier paints, and you can simply paint your ceiling with a HUD-approved vapor barrier paint, and that will give you a vapor barrier. I know Glidden makes one, and I'm sure that other companies do as well. Getting in there and maybe foaming that next summer with a urethane or other type of foam would certainly help with the insulation and give you additional reduction in vapor permeability. But a simple coat of paint, which can be tinted or put on white, is going to probably be your cheap and easiest cure.
Okay. It'd be tough to just slop it in there, I guess.
No, you're painting the ceiling below.
No, I'm painting above. I'm painting the ceilings below are painted.
Right.
Since it's above a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so, those ceilings are those walls and ceiling are painted, there's a small area above the bathroom, and there's no vapor barrier there.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to just ensure before there was no insulation evidently laid in that area, and I'd like to ensure that there's no moisture penetration.
Well, what we're suggesting, Reed, is painting the bathroom ceiling with a coat of vapor barrier paint.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can tint
the interior walls.
Yes, the interior. Well, the ceiling and any interior walls where you have insulation.
Okay.
And that's going to give you a nice, complete seal.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck to you, Reed. Thanks very much for the call. Again, our number is 1-800-642-1234 as we talk with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. And let's go to Chippewa Falls and to Rich for our next call. Hi, Rich.
Hi. I'd like to talk about insulating a crawl space, an unheated crawl space. It's about 3 feet high. It's underneath bedrooms and bathrooms. It has a dirt floor, concrete blocks for the walls. The heating and plumbing hang from the floor joists. The exit plumbing pipe goes along the dirt floor. And does it need to be isolated from the rest of the finished basement, too, is what I'm wondering. Can you help me out on that?
Well, let's see. The first thing that I would do is if it's a cement block. Well, let's see. Let me back up a little bit. You've got the heating underneath the floor. Is that correct?
Yeah, runs along the joists.
So you want to keep that crawl space warm. You can't allow that to be cold. Correct.
That that sounds reasonable. The plumbing is there also hanging from the joists.
In my mind, the best way to insulate it, if you can, and if it's only 3 feet tall, if you could get a minimum of 2 inches of closed cell foam on the outside of the wall, that would give you, that would be a great start. Is that possible at all?
Sure, that I could do that, sure.
Then what you want to do on the surface of that, make sure when you buy your foam that it's the type of foam that will allow you to put a cement coat over the top of it. Otherwise, you'd need to do some other treatments to have it finished, because you don't want the foam exposed to rodents and insects. But the next thing you'll want to do, excuse me, is to get a vapor barrier on the floor and on the dirt floor.
Sure.
And that needs to come up the footing. The footing's probably exposed and be somehow sealed. John, what do you think would be the best way to seal it? You think a caulk around the perimeter?
There certainly are caulks that are available for
that.
Yeah,
I think that would probably be the ticket. And that way you've got the space is warm, you're keeping moisture out from the ground, and it's a fairly clean job. You won't have to be crawling around on your belly for too long.
Yeah, I was in that space, and it's just really dry in there. I mean, the floor is so dry when you crawl along it, you know, it dust kicks up. Do you think that moisture barrier is necessary?
Yeah, absolutely. Just because it feels dry whenever, you know, at times when you happen to be down there, a lot of moisture comes out of the ground. And John, you could probably give him a little more exact numbers on what it is, but you definitely need a vapor barrier. It's the code, and it's there for a good reason. And I would use a minimum of 6 mil plastic. I would even, spend a little extra, maybe get an 8 mil. A little thicker plastic, and make sure it's sealed tightly all around the walls.
All right.
Okie doke.
Thanks.
Okay, Rich, thank you very much. We had an email from Sue in Green Bay who said, we've been told that when we want to build a well-insulated house, we should consider an air exchanger to combat excess moisture. Is that a fact or is that fallacy?
I think that's a fact.
Yep.
We are getting fewer and fewer air changes in houses. We are designing houses now with only 3 air changes per hour. And many houses now have only 5 to 6 per hour. When you get into super insulated houses, we're down to as far as little as 0.5 air changes per hour. At that point, you're going to get a tremendous amount of not only buildup of humidity, but of other things, CO2, it could be urethanes, formaldehydes, you know, things coming out of the new cushions you bought for the couch. So a heat recovery vent system really is a great idea. And, of course, if you've got any radon in the soil, it's going to help with that. You're looking, perhaps about $3,000 now for a good system?
That's a good ballpark guess for a typical house, 2,400 square foot house.
And you can keep your house pressure balanced. The new furnaces that bring outside air into the return plenum, as is required by Wisconsin code, have a tendency to pressurize the house. That's great for radon, but if you have a damp house, it also is going to allow air with moisture to be pushed into the outside walls because you have a pressure differential. So a heat recovery vent system is really going to help you in multiple ways.
One more email from Bonnie in Mount Horeb. Can you tell me what would be a good bathroom fan to buy? There are so many on the market. I want to make sure I get the correct one for a remodeled bathroom.
A bathroom fan, well, definitely you want to get one that's going to move enough air for the space. So you want to figure out the square footage of the floor, the height of the ceiling, and then go from there. You could check the manufacturer's recommendation or even the retailer's recommendations will probably show you on the box how much air will move and what size bathroom you can use it in. The second thing is you want a fan that's going to be quiet. I mean, we've all been in bathrooms that you turn the fan on and it sounds like a jet's taking off, and that's not fun, especially when you're in there for a while taking a shower and so forth. So we've had a lot of luck without, you know, pushing a lot of different brands. We've had a great deal of luck with Panasonic. Panasonic makes very low-sounded quiet fans, very quiet fans, mm-hmm. low sound. Excuse me. And then they also make fans that will automatically turn on when you walk in the room, and you can set them to turn on and then turn off afterwards. If that works, if you've got kids that never use the exhaust fans and you're trying to control the air, the moisture in your house, I think Rebecca called, somebody called earlier with this moisture issues, and mm-hmm. this is one thing you want to be very, very aware of. You want to have the fan turn on. Panasonic's a good one. Braun makes their higher end fan that's their Energy Star rated fan also does that. Some of the fans now will actually take and recover some of the heat and put it back in the room, so you're not just drawing warm air out of your house, but you're actually cycling it back through. So there's a lot of good stuff on the horizon, and there's some good products out there now. So if you see Energy Star rating on the fan, that's a really good place to start.
And good luck to you, Bonnie. Yeah. If you'd like to send your email, the address is talk@wpr.org. We go to Waukesha next to Lee. And Lee, what's on your mind?
Well, kind of a similar question to your last email there, and they touched on a little bit of it, but I installed a bathroom fan light combo a while back and only had a single switch, so I tied the fan and the light together. When you turn the light on, the fan comes on. In the wintertime, though, I feel like I'm just pumping, when that fan comes on, I feel like I'm blowing a lot of heat out of my house, and I'm losing a lot of heat that way. So I'm tempted to separate the fan and the light and just for the wintertime at least kind of cap off that vent so I'm not blowing all that heat out, but then I'm worried about building up a lot of moisture in there.
Yeah, you don't want to cap off the vent.
Okay. Would it be best to separate the two and only run the fan during a shower, or am I really losing a lot of heat that way and it's kind of a non-issue?
Well, generally speaking, most homes, unless they're really well thought out in the construction phase, you definitely want to have the fans on when you're taking a shower. You probably don't need them on when you just go in and wash your hands or, do God's work. But definitely when you're in the shower, so you could switch you could get switches, and if you only have a small single box, you could they call them, I think, a piggyback switch. There's two switches, top and bottom, and two toggles, and so you don't have to actually put a hole in the wall if it's wired correctly. So that might be a good place to start, but don't close the vent off. You really need to move air. And one thing, this is a great opportunity, I think, to bring up Energy Star and focus on energy, because a really good thing to do for your home, and it's good for your life, your health, your home's health, and for value of your house when it comes to selling it, is to have an Energy Star or a Focus on energy audit. There's several people around the state that can do this. I think they're $400 or $500. They will come in. They will assess the ventilation of your house, the furnace, the insulation value, the windows, and give you your house a complete energy checkup and give you a list of things that can be done to improve those. If you do improve a certain percentage of those, you can be entitled to tax excuse me, I got a little tickle, tax credits. You can get sometimes rebates from your energy companies and so forth. It's a great thing to do. And it's a great place to start if you're looking at improving ventilation or insulation.
Yeah, I really second that, Ken. Lee, you really don't know the result on your heating bills of these fans. They may really, really be minimal. And by doing an energy audit, you may find out what your real energy problems are. So mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't spend a nickel until I spent a little bit on an energy audit, because it is amazing how leaky houses are. And we think we're increasing our heat bill because we're moving 60 or 90 CFM through a bath fan when we've got 500 CFM blowing through the walls around the windows. So I would go ahead and get that energy audit and blower door test done first, and they are going to tell you what it's worth putting money in.
Okay. Yeah, I know they're going to tell me new windows and whatnot. It's an old house. It was built in 57, and as far as I can tell, they're original windows. We've had some replaced, but I was just kind of looking for some small things I could do myself that would, and I've got the plastic up over the windows already, so that'll help in that area. But I think I'll just get a separate switch and handle that, and just use the fan only when necessary.
Okay, Lee. Thanks very much for the call. Good luck to you. And to Jim in Menominee. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I got a question about a bath fan as well. I just bought a house, and the fan exhaust goes down the wall into the basement and then out. And so I'm building up condensation. Can I run that through the roof?
Yeah. I mean, that's the typical way of doing it. Do you have access to the ceiling above, the roof above the bathroom?
Yeah. Yeah, I just can't run it out the wall.
Okay. Yeah, it's just fine to run it through the roof. There's a couple things. Once you get up into the attic, if it's an unheated space, you want to make sure that the pipe that you run is an insulated pipe. Putting it through the roof can be a little tricky, and you don't want to just have anybody do it. You don't want to just cut a hole and roof it, because the flashing is the issue there. The flashing is the metal that the vent that sits on the roof is, and you want to make sure that that's protected from the weather so that you don't have leaking when it rains. So it's not something I would recommend doing yourself unless you have some experience in the construction industry. But you could certainly have a good quality electrician or a heating contractor could do the work for you. It's not that expensive to do.
Okay, I need to, I'm going to do a new roof next year.
Yeah, you can coordinate it with that. One other thing to remember is that sometimes even with the insulated duct, you get a little condensation buildup because you're blowing a lot of moisture out of the house. So we like to put a little... we don't like to run it just straight up to the roof. We like to run it slightly horizontally for a while with a little dip in it, sort of like if you can think of the drain on the bottom of your sink has got a little P-trap. It's something like that, but not as pronounced. That way any moisture doesn't get completely eliminated from the house as a place to sit and evaporate.
Okay. One other quick one. I'm going to put some insulation up in the attic.
Great.
I got a wood stove. Is there anything I need to worry about going around the pipe for the wood stove?
Absolutely. We had a caller earlier that was wondering about what to do with, going through the penetration. There's very strict code guidelines. There's very strict manufacturer guidelines on the distance that you can have any sort of combustible from the stovepipe. There are flashing kits that you install on the ceiling and on the roof that you can nail them to the roof, keep the combustibles away, combustibles being, insulation, wood, drywall, anything that could possibly burn. And then the pipe goes through that. So definitely do some research. Do not put anything next to your chimney. That's a very serious fire hazard.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, Jim. We're talking with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg, taking your questions today about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues. And the number for you is 1-800-642-1234. We had an email from Jack, currently has an old, about 20 years old, electric water heater, which will need to be replaced at some point. Comment on the pros and cons of natural gas, power-vented, condensing, and tankless heaters. Also, would it be a good idea to keep the old electric heater for a tempering unit?
Well, that's a big question.
Sure is.
Try to compare and contrast all the options. If your house is fairly small, a whole house, single gas-powered ventless water heater will function just fine. It'll work really well for you. It's got to be sized for the number of fixtures that you have. And it'll be a little more expensive to install, but very cost-effective to operate. If you don't have natural gas coming to your house and you have to run a gas line, it may be cost-effective for you to use electric water heaters. But there are out there now point-of-use electric heaters that are very energy efficient. So you'd have maybe one by your shower. You'd have one by the kitchen. There are only a few $100 a piece plus installation. If you've got electrical service and no gas, they work very well. the old-fashioned gas, high-energy efficient, well, old-fashioned now, high-energy efficient gas tank. They work very well, too. They're side-vented units. You don't have to go through a chimney, so you don't need chimney space for them. I think the big issue is if you can get gas to your house, you know, that might be a consideration. But definitely look at the comparison between these point-of-use units and the whole house electric gas-powered, rather, a tankless heater as a starting place. John, you want to add anything to this?
No, there's so many choices out there.
Yeah, it's just mind-boggling.
I think sometimes it's call a real good plumber and have them list the options and the costs. And as you say, whether it's gas, electric, or LP, it really depends upon the fuel source because the cost per BTU, there's a difference of about 300%.
That's not small.
That's not small at all. So you really need to analyze based upon the fuel that you have available to your house.
So good luck, and give us an email and let us know what you decided.
Exactly. Jerry in Viroqua, let's go to you, give you a chance to get in. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. My question is, I've got a block structure. I'm going to make an apartment. It's a 12-inch block with poured in beaded styrofoam. I'm going to stud up the inside walls to make it a straight wall and give me more space for insulation. Do I stop the cold with blown in or foam closed cell at the inside of the block, or do I go ahead and insulate it and then just put poly on the outside of the 2x4s?
Your 12-inch block is going to have an R factor, an R value about 1.28, which isn't much. The problem is the concrete transfers the heat very well, so you're going to need quite a bit of insulation. So you've got a couple ways of doing it. You probably are going to have to look at an assembly, and you may want to take a look at an inch or an inch and a half of foam insulation, which could be sheet insulation, directly against the block, and then stud out behind that, and then add fiberglass or cellulose between the studs. Mm-hmm. But you're going to have to decide how much insulation value you want in that wall and then sort of design accordingly.
What kind of windows do you have there?
They're solid pane. They're double. Replaced them. They're a double pane, non-openable.
Are they mortared in steel, or are they wood frame?
They're wood frame.
Oh, that's good. A lot of these old brick or block buildings had
the old steel. Yes.
Steel. Mm-hmm. Windows, and those are just horrible because that's a weak point when you insulate on the inside. There is right at the sills of the windows. You're not going to be able to get much insulation value around the windows.
There's a concern about sound also. That's what I was wondering about the spray foam, the closed cell.
The spray foam certainly does work well. One thing we are finding is we're finding more shrinkage in laboratory tests than is being advertised. Especially in high temperature in roofs, we found shrinkage up to 30%, whereas 5% is advertised. And we found the shrinkage has caused a few problems in some buildings. It's actually pulled water barrier and sill flashings and window flashings off. So you have to be a little bit careful about who applies it, how they apply it, and to make sure that it's good. What's nice about it is it gives you a great air seal, it gives you a thermal barrier, and it gives you a moisture barrier as well. So if you can afford it, it works very well. But you can come up with the same R value using sheet foam, which has less embedded energy, so it's not exactly green, but it's greener than urethane foam, which has high embedded energy, and you're going to save quite a bit of money.
Yeah, it's something you can do yourself. That's another
sure.
issue.
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah, cost is a factor also. So, okay, thank you very much.
All right, good luck to you, Jerry. Thanks very much for the call. We'll get to Maureen, Paul, and Lee in just a moment as we continue on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you with us today. We're taking calls about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. And John, I know that determining the R value of anything is difficult. Is there a reference that you can point to that will help us out?
Jim, the Oak Ridge National Laboratory has an R value table, which is really interesting to read. I'm not so smart that I actually knew a 12-inch block wall was worth R1.28, but since I had the Oak Ridge...
Oh, you're modest, John.
But I knew where to look, Jim, which means I was smart. And I looked at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory R-value table. So like Jerry and Viroqua could download that very easily, and then by adding together the numbers on the table, he can determine exactly how to put together a wall to give him R13 or R18 or R26 or R35. The other thing that's really interesting to look at in this table, Jim, is to look at R values on different window types. And I keep encouraging people in old houses not to replace their windows. And I think Oak Ridge Laboratory has given me all kinds of ammunition towards that, because it's amazing that you can make your old windows up to 80% effective as new triple pane windows by simply doing good weather stripping, sealing, and good quality storms. So it's a nice guide for do-it-yourselfers, and I think it's a nice guide for trying to make some energy decisions on really important things, on maybe spending $35,000 to replace windows for a payback of $120 a year.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. And again, that's Oak Ridge National Laboratory is location?
Should be able to go to Oak Ridge National Lab and then type in search for R-value table, and it should come up.
All right. To Maureen in La Crosse next. Hello, Maureen.
Hi. I have a kind of interesting situation. We've had a number of suggestions, wondering what you guys think. We have a very old, round 1900 wood frame building that has been moved and set onto a new poured concrete foundation. We need to insulate an area of the floor, about 4x6 or 5x8 feet, need to insulate under the floor, and wondering how we might be able to do that and keep it relatively mouse-proof.
Are you talking about underneath the floor of your house or underneath the floor of the concrete foundation basement?
Underneath the floor of the house. There's 2x8 joists. Again, it's a wood frame house. We use it like a cabin,
mm-hmm.
So it's unheated for some of the year.
Does the basement have any infrastructure, or is there a basement?
It's just a crawl space.
And what's the floor of the crawl space?
It's dirt, but we do have a vapor barrier and, do they call it pea gravel?
Mm-hmm.
I think underneath there.
But you're still getting mice in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. But it's just
tenacious little critters.
Yeah. This is one section that we need to insulate. We had batting in there before, and the mice just loved making nests in there.
Well, the mice love every kind of insulation. They will eat through foam like you wouldn't believe. It gives them a great little nesting cavity. I think what you really have to do is get your insulation, and then you've got to cover it. Mm-hmm. And the easiest thing to cover it with is a cementous material from Hardy Plank or CertainTeed, something that the mice are going to grind their little teeth down on before they're able to get through. And, of course, if you've got limited access to the crawl space, that can be rather difficult because most of the material comes in 4x8 sheets. But there's also some 2-foot-wide material. You can go onto the James Hardy Company's website and look at the various materials that they have available. And that's probably the best thing. Go ahead and fill these cavities and then cover the cavity so the mice can't possibly get into them.
And that's what one of the things we were also looking at, insulating and then covering it with like aluminum soffit fascia material.
What's your experience been with mice and squirrels eating aluminum, Ken?
Well, squirrels can definitely. I've never heard of a mouse eating through a sheet of 28-gauge aluminum. But
the worry I have is that usually it is, it's not flat and straight. It's got these little strengthening ridges in it.
Yeah, what you're going to have is you're going to have to fill those ridges. You'd probably find it that John's suggestion is going to be easier to accomplish. I was just wondering if you could use the tile backing cement board, because those come in 3x5 sheets. You can maybe fit those in a little bit easier, or not as hard to wield.
I think you're right, Ken. I think anything that is basically a cementous material, mm-hmm. The critters are not going to be too interested in.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
All right, Maureen, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. The number for you is 1-800-642-1234 as we talk with Ken and John. And go to Eau Claire to Lee next. Hi, Lee. What's on your mind?
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for doing this today. I'm a rather novice when it comes to, you know, our home and whatnot, but we have an exhaust fan in our guest bathroom, if you will. And recently I've kind of, you know, buttoned up the house a little bit just because it's getting colder and it and so forth. But I noticed that as soon as I buttoned up the house and, like, ramped up the air exchanger and so forth, that I was seeing some moisture around the actual fan and vent in that bathroom. I'm wondering, could it be a leak in the roof, or is it just condensation coming down from the vent, or what, or is it from the pressure from the air exchanger? It actually made the sheetrock around the vent wet. And I'm just kind of concerned. I'm just wondering what that could be. I'm just hoping it's not like a roof leak or something.
No, it's very likely that it's condensation that's sitting in the fan unit or in the hose just above the vent pipe just above the fan unit, and it's dripping back in and dripping around the fan and getting the insulation and drywall wet around there. A quick question for you. You have an air-to-air heat exchanger, which is great. Is there any way to tie that vent into the heat exchanger?
I think the heat exchanger, I suppose it could.
I'm just wondering. We've had some systems designed for us that had all of the house ventilation tied into the heat exchanger, and it all worked really, you know, quite synergistically. But
I don't think that in that situation it would not be feasible because it's totally not even close to that.
Now, can you get up in the attic and see what the vent looks like up there?
I haven't done that yet. I mean, we have like a small little door to get up to the attic, and it's actually, I've never been up there, so.
It's not a bad idea, and take a camera with you and take some photographs while you're up there, because then you can refer to them if you have any contractors you need to speak to. You know, you could point these different items out, but if you could, I would crawl over there on the top, peel back, see if the insulation's wet, see if there's moisture, see where the moisture is on the outside, because I'll bet you there might be some moisture around the base of the unit right at the ceiling, and that the drywall's wet and probably insulation's wet.
Sure.
Do
I need to replace all that then at this point if that's happened?
Not necessarily. If it's only just been slightly moist, you need to dry it out, make sure that there's no mold growing.
Well, I turned the fan on immediately after I noticed this issue, and then I left it on for like 5-6 hours, and I came back and it was bone dry.
Well, see, that's saying that it's probably condensation. And then you also want to find out if that hose goes straight up to the roof.
Sure.
Because like I'd said a little bit earlier in the program, sometimes moisture will get up there and it cools as it gets closer to the top and condenses and then rolls back in.
Sure.
And might hit the fixture and roll off to the side and get the adjacent area a little bit damp. So.
Thank you for the advice.
Yeah, all right. Lee. Have fun crawling around up there.
Thanks. Have a wonderful
Take your camera with you now.
You too.
All right, Lee. Thank you very much for the call. Phil sent us an email. We have a small amount of mold on our varnished, water-based polyurethane wooden windows as a result of condensation, but also on our wooden siding. On the latter, we used a Pittsburgh paint acrylic oil product for decks and siding, which includes fungicides, but some of the siding is molding anyway. What can we do?
Well, it is so hard to dehumidify your entire lawn. It just is really a problem. The all the things that we used to add to paints that really worked, were extremely dangerous, and so of course they're off the market. And what we have now out there is not is probably not adequate to the task. So especially on the north side of houses, where we have less sun drying, we end up with a lot of different types of siding, everything from vinyl to cedar that ends up growing fungal growth on it. You can try to improve the airflow, Phil. If you've got bushes that are too close, make sure that they get trimmed back. Keep the soil around the house on that side dry. Make sure you have gutters. Make sure you've got good pitch to the soil. And what you're really trying to do is you're trying to control the outdoor environment. And it's pretty limited, but if you've got a lot of rain coming off the roof into dense bushes, that is almost a guarantee that you're going to see fungal growth on the siding. So think about improving your airflow and reducing the amount of moisture out there.
Another thing you could do is maybe once a year get out there with a low pressure, high, not a super high pressure washer, but a medium pressure washer and a brush. get some dishwashing liquid like Dove or something and just wash the house down. Give it a bath. It'll like you for it.
And then inside the house where we've got mold on the wooden windows?
About all they can do there is to wipe it off. And we talked earlier about trying to make sure you know what your humidity is in your house and try to get that humidity down to 40 or even 35% if you're in northern Wisconsin to decrease the amount of condensation you're going to see on the windows. Mm-hmm. Unless you have incredibly expensive windows in Wisconsin, you are going to get condensation during part of the winter, as cold as it gets here. And about all you can do is make sure you've got a good quality finish, wipe up the water as soon as you can so we don't start getting fungal growth causing the finish to fail and then the wood to turn gray.
And mold in some cases.
And mold, right? Yes. Yeah.
Talking about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, specializing in residential renovation projects, and John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting in Fitchburg, consulting for historic restoration projects, water and mold litigation, and is a Wisconsin registered home inspector. You can reach them, Ken at adamsofmadison.com. John at his address is frei@chorus.net. And we'll be back to take more of your calls after this look at the latest news. Jim Packard sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you with us today. We're discussing home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg. And our telephone number is 1-800-642-1234. The lines are full right now. We did have an email from Bev that we referred to during the news. When I looked at different casement windows, I read the fine print, saw they recommend humidity levels in the home in the low to mid-teens when the weather really gets cold for double-pane, argon-filled, low-E wood frame windows. Humidity this low may be good for the windows, but would destroy the rest of the house and any furniture, musical instruments, for instance, therein. Humidity lower than 35 to 45% is also unhealthy for the people in the home and actually aggravates respiratory problems. What windows actually work in realistic conditions in Wisconsin homes, and are any of them wood clad on the interior? Gentlemen.
About the best window that we can design in Wisconsin is probably going to be about an R5 window. And that is most likely going to be a wood window because we've got a little bit less thermal bridging with wood. Now, you can make an argument that there's some vinyl windows that will come in at about the same range. But at that point, we are still going to get condensation, most likely when we hit about 35% humidity. What the window manufacturer is doing is they're basically trying to protect themselves because people have sued windows. Mm-hmm. And people have hired me to sue windows. And I've gone to their houses and said, your house is too wet. There's nothing wrong with these windows. But they're putting in these unrealistically low relative humidities. If you have a house with 15% relative humidity, you're going to have static electricity discharges. Your nose is going to dry out. You're going to be sick a lot, and you are not going to want to live there. The problem in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Upper Michigan is simply that you cannot balance indoor humidity versus the R value of windows to have absolutely no condensation. So what we tell people is try to keep it down to 35%. When you get condensation, wipe it up, and that's really about the best you can do.
Yeah, wipe it up.
All right, yeah. Bev, there is the answer for you. Let's go to Paul in Racine and see what's on his mind. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Great show.
Thank you.
Just give you a little forefront here. I had radon problems, and I brought fresh air into the house, routed that into the furnace, and that cut my radon levels way down from 20 down to like 6. But my problem is, both with the fresh air intake, I'm getting moisture on that pipe, and it's insulated, and I've got moisture coming down my chimney, like about a quarter cup I find in the morning, and it's typically from when the water heater is running. I did run an extra pipe up my chimney this summer, halfway up the chimney, a 3-inch B vent to try and take care of this problem with the water heater. Do you have any other suggestions what I might be able to do here?
Well, one of the problems you have with I assume it's a gas water heater that you've got, or propane, one of the two. Hello? There we go.
There you
are. Sorry about that. I assume it's a gas water heater, Paul.
Yeah, it's a gas water heater.
But one of the problems is that the exhaust doesn't really get hot enough, and we see all kinds of problems in chimneys. One of the reasons that the chimneys are lined after they remove a furnace and have a vented hot water heater go up the chimney is that it like eats the mortar. The unburned gases eat the mortar. Condensation can develop. My understanding is there's not a lot that you can do about it within the same system that you have. And so I would suggest next time you replace your hot water heater to get a side vent unit. You eliminate the need for the chimney altogether. That's where I would start looking. I'd like to see what it looks like to see if there's something else going on there. Do you have anything to add, John?
Just having a liner is going to help, but it's not going to help enough because the chimney is still going to get cold and the liner is going to get cold.
Right.
Now, you can fill the old flue with insulation, but I think your suggestion of going to a high-efficiency water heater is a lot better one because that chimney-vented water heater, if you look at the seasonal efficiency, it's probably in the 55 to 65% range. I always tell people that they have a self-cooling water heater because there's a continuous draft up through that core in the middle of the water heater up through your chimney. Mm-hmm. So as soon as the flame goes out, that water starts cooling due to convection. So I would change out that water heater with a side-vented one.
Since this water heater is relatively new in the last 5 years, can I put a blower on the outlet of it to try and force that air up the chimney and keep that moisture from hanging around in the chimney and doing any problem to the liner?
I think you should take a look and see if you can get a 30% federal tax credit for replacement of that water heater and simply replace it rather than spend money to no particular avail. You are going to decrease the problem, but you're not going to solve it with the blower. You're going to use more electricity. You're increasing your utility bills. I'd rather see you get rid of the problem and decrease your utility bills and get Uncle Sam to pay for part of it. I think that's probably the wiser course to take a look at. You're looking at, maybe $800 for a water heater? You're going to have to check.
Some change, a little more than that, but that's
check
probably
it with Energy Star. Now, if you can get 30% of that from the federal government plus a rebate, I think that's probably going to make a certain amount of sense.
Okay, what about the fresh air intake, the 4-inch pipe that I've got coming into the furnace that's collecting moisture, even though I have it insulated?
Yeah, it's insulated R5, and R5 is not enough insulation. Sometimes it'll condense right where the pipe comes into the return plenum. But that's simply that's what the code requires at this point is that level of insulation, and so that's what everybody puts in. And it really isn't enough to stop condensation. So you are going to get some condensation. It is suggesting that perhaps your basement is a little on the damp side. I think we should set up a website, Ken, to sell cheap
humidistats.
Humidistats, because I think everybody needs one.
Humidistats are us.
Humidistats are us. Good. We will get that up soon. But see what the humidity is in your basement. And it could be that things are a little wet down there. And if you get the humidity down to 40%, your condensation problem may disappear.
Great.
All right, Paul. Good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 to talk with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. And let's go to Cottage Grove and to Bill. Hi, Bill.
Hi, gents. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
I had several questions, but I've been on hold long enough that you answered most of them. Like a lot of folks, the air quality in the house is what I'm concerned about. The house built in 78, 6-inch walls, very tight. We got new windows all around 5 years ago. Insulation is good. The question is, we've got an air-to-air exchanger, which was necessary because we had the air quality test in the house, and it was quite a concern, like you mentioned, not just for moisture, but VOCs and a bunch of other stuff. So we've got that thing operating. In addition, we've got a whole house dehumidifier because humidity has always been, when we first moved in, was tough to control. So my question is about, there's a variable speed fan on the air exchanger. There's no timer. And so what I'm curious about is, it can go from low to high, and you can tell this fan speed is quite different between those, and there's a lot of settings. There's like a little blinking light, and you go plus or minus. There's 16 blinks from low to high. So I kind of normally set around the middle, what I would consider to be about a medium. And so I'm wondering, you know, how do I know if I'm setting this thing at the right speed? And I know that that would probably change over the seasons. Do I use the relative humidity in the house as my part of my guide, or what do you think?
Do you know the make and model, Bill, of the HRV system you have?
Well, I could run down the basement quick. I should probably also say that we run the furnace. Since I got bad allergies, the allergist recommended don't open your windows, which, of course, is kind of a bummer certain times of the year. Other times, not an issue at all. But so we run the furnace fan 24/7, and that way the air is being filtered through the space guard. Mm-hmm. And we're not bringing in a lot of dust and pollen and stuff from the outside. Yeah, okay. It's a GreenTech.
GreenTech, okay. I think you're going to have to go. I know a few of them, but I don't know GreenTech. I think you're going to have to go to the manufacturer's website and see what they can download for you so that you can set it manually and know what you're asking of it. We have design systems where we actually put in CO2 monitors and humidity monitors to turn them on and off. Mm-hmm. That's getting to be a little on the expensive side. We use them mostly in commercial spaces, churches, assembly hall sort of things. Perhaps the price on that sort of monitoring is going to come down and those sorts of controls are going to become available. That's probably a good email to GreenTech's technical support people. But I think you'll find that almost all of the HRV people are technically very savvy. They have good technical support. You can email them, you can call them, and they will help you out with your settings so you're maximizing the performance for your HRV.
Okay, and my guess is the more air I'm bringing in, probably the better, as long as it's not causing trouble with humidity and so forth.
Well, generally that's the case. So you have to take a look at your heating bills because your heat recovery vent system is going to scrub some of the heat, right, a good percentage of the heat out of the outflowing air, but you are still going to be bringing in air that's cooler than the inside air. So you will be losing some BTUs every time you operate it, and you should probably do a little research on the HRV you have to see exactly how efficient it is, and also watch the maintenance on these things.
Yeah.
They really do need to be maintained annually. If they end up getting dirty and dusty, they will simply burn themselves out, and you can use a lot of electricity without improving your indoor air quality.
Yeah, it's got filters. I clean those regularly.
Great.
So I've got a handle on that.
Yeah, you sound like you're a real knowledgeable homeowner, and I think you're the sort of guy, if you do a little research on their website, you're going to answer all your questions pretty easily.
All right. Well, thanks, fellas.
All right, Bill. Hey, thanks
for
very
calling.
Much for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. David in Middleton is up next. Hello, David. What's on your mind today?
Hi, guys. Good afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about a project in a small upstairs bathroom in my home in Middleton, and my wife would like to have more light coming down the stairs from the bathroom. We've looked at sun tubes, and we can't get it to do what we want it to do. Here's my question. Can I sneak a, let's say, a 24-inch by 4-foot casement window in an outside wall and not have to deal with a header? And I'll hang up and listen to my answer, okay? Thank you.
Do you know how far apart your studs are up there?
They're 24 on center.
So you're thinking of putting the window in between two studs?
Correct.
That's no problem. You can do that no problem.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. The studs are the part that are holding the roof up, basically. And if you go between the studs, that's not really a structural issue.
Okay.
We've done this before. What you could do is you could, when you make your opening, are you going to put this window in yourself?
Well, it's a second story, and I'm probably, I don't know, I probably will get some help, but what's the question?
If you're going to do this yourself, you want to drill a couple of holes in the wall, small holes, and check to see if there's any wiring running through. If there's wiring running through, all bets are off. Where's that wiring come from? Where's it going? How do you reroute it? You know, and then you want to have an electrician on that. Once you get past that, you could take and make a plywood template that you screw right to the studs, and you can cut the center of that without damaging the drywall.
Right.
So that would be a nice easy way to do it. It's fairly clean. If you got you cover everything up with with plastic, and then have a friend or a son hold a vacuum cleaner right next to the saw or knife and vacuum up 95% of the dust.
So no header required. Probably some jack studs to hold the weight of the window would be advised, or not even necessary.
Well, you'd want to. It depends on if it's going to be a wooden window or vinyl window.
Thinking, it's a bathroom. I'd like to stay with wood, like aluminum clad window. Wood inside.
There's more longevity. Most even a mediocre wooden window usually lasts longer than a high quality vinyl. But vinyls are getting a little better. They're not particularly environmentally friendly. People think because they're inexpensive and have a high R value that they're good. But bathroom might be the place to do it. But a jack studs and a bottom plate, a top plate would be very smart to have. It also gives you something to screw your trim to or nail your trim to.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you for the help.
All right, David. Good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. And let's go to Sarah in Madison next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, I have a question about a woodpecker who has pecked a hole in our stucco and wondering what you would recommend to replace or to put into the stucco, fill the hole.
Well, my assumption, since the woodpecker pecked a hole in it, is that it isn't stucco. It is not stucco.
It's probably
exterior insulation finish system, which is a thin acrylic, sort of cement-looking material put over blue foam. And once they break through the surface, the foam is easy to peck away. Do you have a fairly new house, Sarah?
Yes. It's about 8 years old.
Yeah. So that's most certainly it's called EIFS, E-I-F-S. And that's simply going to need to get repaired if you can find out who did the work on the house. Because it's probably a colored latex-based or colored acrylic material, and you're going to want to match the color. There are only a few manufacturers. The majority of the work in Madison is probably done by the Zander Company on Meadow Road, 833-6620. I would give a call to them first and see if they maybe did the house, and if not, you may have to call the local Drive-It distributor, and they will come out and patch it for you at a relatively low cost.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right, Sarah. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Mike in Coon Valley next. Hello, Mike. Go ahead.
Okay, we want to tile our basement floor, and the cement has some hairline cracks, no unevenness, too much really in it. Can we lay the tile directly on top of that cement, or are we asking for trouble with that crack? And are you familiar with the underlayment product Ditra, D-I-T-R-A, which goes under ceramic, could be used under the tile in this situation?
Yeah, Ditra, we call it. It's a plastic material that's got air pockets, and you mortar that in and then tile over that. And it's very effective on floors that are marginally understructured, but not significantly understructured. Typically, a basement floor, how old's your house?
It's about 14 years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, typically, first of all foundations, all floors, concrete floors crack someplace. And if you look at sidewalks, they've got these little grooves cut in them. Those are expansion joints. Those are there to sort of control where things are going to crack. So I wouldn't worry too much about a small crack in the basement floor. If you did tile it, the Ditra would certainly give you a lot more insurance over the top of it. The mortar tends to be a little bit softer than the concrete underneath, and so any movement underneath will be absorbed a little bit by the Ditra and also by the mortar, and that will help protect tile. When you order your tile, you might want to have an extra 5 to 10%, just in case you get a cracked tile over time. You got a replacement that's going to match. But no problem, really.
Okay.
Good luck to you, Mike. Let's go to Mick in Rice Lake. Hello, Mick. What's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, and it's a great program. My question kind of revolves around the window issues you guys have been talking about. We've replaced our windows with Anderson, basically factory windows.
Mm-hmm.
And they're good windows. I've had to install like 3M window wrap around those. Actually helps improve the comfort, and it also cuts down the condensation. And found we also had a problem with our humidifier. The solenoid was sticking and putting up too much humidity. Question I have is, sources of like a storm window that would insert into that space where the screens go on Anderson windows, or is that basically a waste of effort?
It's not a waste of effort at all, Mick, because a storm window basically is good for about R1 to R1.1. So your windows are probably, if you really tested them, you know, the whole window, not what the manufacturer rates, or they just test the best area, are probably about R3.1. So you're looking at a 25% increase by putting that plastic film up, which is why you've seen that reduction in condensation. Ken, I don't think Anderson makes an insert, but do you know anybody else who would make an insert? That seems like another business you and I should get into. Besides
there's several companies out there that make them. Let's see. You could first of all check with Anderson, because I don't know if they do make an insert for their windows. I know Marvin makes them for theirs now. Pella, I think, started doing it, so you might be able to get them directly from the manufacturer. You probably have either 200 or 400 series. And that would be a good place to start. I take it these are double hungs?
No, they're cranks. I have one.
That's a little bit different then.
Yeah, and they're pretty good size.
Yeah, that's different. I'm sorry, we were assuming they were double hungs. I'm not exactly sure. I've had somebody else ask me about interior storm windows for casement. These are called casement windows, crankouts. And I'm sorry, I don't know that much about it. I've never seen anything that hasn't been just sort of jury-rigged and, you know, handmade. And they're not very effective, because what you want is this. You want the best insulation value to the inside of the house. These don't usually seal up quite as well, and so they allow moisture through, and you create a little wet space in there. So I don't really think that you're going to have much luck finding something for these windows.
Continue on with the 3M wrap, huh?
The nice thing about the 3M wrap is you really are making it airtight, and that's the problem with the inserts, is that companies make what they call the energy panels. But if you get any air in there, you end up with cold spots at the bottom and some condensation. Then that condensation sits in there. So what you're doing right now is probably the most effective. This is something I think, Ken, you and I need to look into this. Because what I'm seeing from storm windows and energy panels with the improvement that we can make, we should do a little research before the next time we're on and see if we can bring something to the air.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. You know, the triple pane windows with a low E glaze, when you replace your windows, usually have probably the best bang that you can get. What are you looking at, John?
I'm looking at Oak Ridge National Laboratory here, what we're finding is that these suspended films now that we have in the windows are really highly effective. And we actually have window manufacturers now that are doing low E glass with double suspended films.
And we're going to have to leave it right there, because time has evaporated for us. We've been talking about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues with Ken Adams. He's Ken at adamsofmadison.com. John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting is FREI at chorus.net. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of the calls today, but we'll be back doing this on the second Thursday of January. And coming tomorrow on Garden Talk, Bob Tomer, senior lecturer in horticulture at the UW-Madison, will be our guest, and Larry will be back. I'm Jim Packard. Thank you so much for listening to the Ideas Network.